Okay.
Right. Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having me here at this great meeting. So my talk, as you will see, is very close to Jacques. And more specifically, what I want to do is introduce an analytic approach to SYK physics, which in pretty much every single respect is complementary to the J sigma formalism, which we all know and love so much. Yeah? And to understand what is meant by complementarity, let's take a look at G sigma on the background of a timeline. Yeah? And you all know that, I mean, G sigma is a nominally exact rewriting of the SYK partition function, but to actually do something with it, I mean, to get results, to compute, we need to resort to approximations. And in concrete terms, this means that we are running a large N stabilized mean field program. And this mean field approach arguably works best for shortish times in the sense that as we push on, I mean, probe larger and larger times, and in particular times, I mean, exceeding polynomial time scales in N, the number of microscopic constituents in the systems, fluctuations go wild and, I mean, things get progressively harder. Now, the approach I want to discuss with you today is likewise based on an exact rewriting of the SYK quantum partition function. And again, I mean, we need to resort to some kind of mean field approach to make sense of it, to compute something, only that this time, the mean field program works best in the regime of asymptotically long times. I mean, the larger, the better. And here, fluctuations get more and more violent as you push into the realm of shorter times, and short means n fractions of the order of the inverse level spacing. So we are working at, in a sense, ideally, at exponentially larger times. Now, this kind of complementarity, I mean, short times to large times, extends to the level of symmetries. You all know that the mean field approach we are running in G sigma is based on a kind of spontaneous breaking of a nearly realized conformal symmetry in the problem. And the same here, only that this time we are talking about a very different symmetry. The symmetry was touched upon by Jacques in the previous talk, some causal symmetry breaking, which I will explain in more detail. And it's a spontaneous breakdown of this one, which generates fluctuations in this approach. Now, there are other kind of dualities. For example, G sigma works best very close to the ground state in the tails of the system, while we prefer to work in the bent center. But anyway, we have this kind of complementarity scheme, and it comes with open question. Let me just mention that somewhere in the middle there is an ecosystem where the two are supposed to touch, and I have no idea how they talk to each other and how these symmetries are interrelated. That means that there is some terra incognita in the middle where, I mean, interesting and maybe terrible things await. Yeah, but this is kind of the setting. And in the rest of the talk, I want to explain the foundations and applications of this approach, which many of you, or probably most of you, don't know. And let me begin by summarizing in a few bullet points the main basic construction principles. Yeah? So first of all, and that gets some time to getting used to, in this approach, we approach the SYK Hamiltonian from a first quantized perspective. So we think of it as a big matrix, yeah? A big matrix acting in a big Hilbert space. And once we do that, and that was already, I mean, used by Jacques extensively, physical observables we could be possibly interested in are pretty much all of them are encoded in matrix elements of resolvent operators. So these are our prime objects of interest we want to know. Now, probably, well, I mean, think that for most interacting systems, such a matrix, first quantized matrix representation remains purely formal, simply because the representing matrices are way too complicated. Yeah, they are sparse, they are exponentially high dimensional, they are massively correlated, horrible things. But SYK, it turns out, is just simply enough that one can make analytic progress in this approach. And this simplicity is based on a number of principles. First of all, SYK is everybody talks to everybody, so it's zero dimensional. And second, there sits a Majorana-Clifford algebra in the background with very simple commutation relations. And these two things in combination give us enough tailwind to actually compute things from this approach, as I hope I can convince you. Okay, so this is the setting, and the talk is organized as follows. I first introduce this non-linear sigma model, I mean the the architecture of this approach. This first part will be a bit methodological. I mean, I hate to say technical. I was thinking whether to do this or not, but there are so many G-sigma aficionados here that I thought it would be worthwhile to discussing similarities and differences between these approaches. So if you don't like technical stuff, you can just switch off, and I will send a wake-up signal when we turn to discussing a few results. Yeah? So results means that I will discuss, as a benchmark test essentially, spectral fluctuations. This touches upon Jacques' talk. And then in the third part, this is brand new. I mean, I turn to a subject which I personally find very interesting. That's wave function statistics, and in particular, wave function fractality in Fock space. Well, that's kind of new stuff. Okay, so how do we construct this approach? First, the basics. I mean, you all know that we consider 2n Majoranas, 2n, not n, I count to 2n. 2n Majoranas, all pretty usual. We can construct from them n complex fermions. Here's our old friend, SYK Hamiltonian. It acts in a 2 to the n-dimensional Hilbert space, not n over 2, because we count to 2n. And there is a natural basis in this space to work with, which will pop up later, the occupation number basis constructed from these fermions. Yeah, I mean, these n nodes are just 0 and 1, I mean, and we have 2 to the n states of this type. Now, like I said, we want to think of this, as a matrix acting in the Hilbert space spanned by these basis states. And in particular, we want to know resolvent operators. So we can consider arbitrary strings, I mean, higher order products of resolvents, but I mean, for the purposes of this talk, it suffices to just consider just 2. From them, you can get number fluctuations and form factors, etc. So 2 green functions labeled by Fock space states and energy arguments. And these energy arguments in my talk will mostly sit, they like to sit close to the center of the band. Not in the tail, but close to the center of the band. And then we need to average over configurational disorder sitting up here. Yeah? Now this
code. Does this mean that's a matrix element of the resolvent between 2 of those Fock space states?
Once again?
Do the subscripts on G mean that it's a matrix element?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I mean, Fock space state 1, 1 over E minus H, Fock space 2. Precisely this.
Yeah? What about
the retarded and advanced. I mean, like in quantum mechanics, retarded and advanced, which is actually very important. I mean, yeah? Any more questions on this here? Please don't ask all the questions at the end. I mean, it's much more productive, maybe, if you ask them when they pop up, yeah? Anything is unclear. Okay, so now we compute these animals by the machinery of actually the general theory of random linear operators. Huh? And that means in practice that we do now a whole lot of Gaussian integrals. The first thing is we take these green functions and we represent them, as was mentioned by Jacques, as Gaussian integrals over Grassmann integration variables, as Gaussian integrals. Then we do another Gaussian integral. We average over J and pick up a quartic, not eighth order, quartic nonlinearity in the exponent. This we decouple by a bunch of Hubbard-Stratonovich fields, do half a dozen of more Gaussian integrals, and then we arrive at what? This. So this is now the analog of the G sigma, but in this formalism. And it's likewise an exact reformulation of the SYK, of these correlation functions. So the correlation functions sit symbolically here. And we represent them as a matrix integral, integral over matrix. And this matrix integral has an action which is halfway intuitive. It actually looks almost close to G sigma. There is a fermion determinant sitting here. This fermion determinant contains the energy arguments of the green functions, their causality structure, plus minus I infinitesimal. This is the Pauli matrix sigma 3 here. And then it talks to the matrix field, which is integrated over. Now, this matrix we are integrating over, its fluctuations are controlled by a Gaussian weight sitting here. I discuss this in a sec. And here you have 2 to the n, the dimension of Hilbert space. So that's exact at this point. The SYK physics sits here. I'll explain that in a moment. Otherwise, it looks pretty simple, but there is a trade-off, namely this matrix we are integrating over is a monster. It is very high dimensional. It's a matrix in Fock space. So it's exponentially high dimensional. And then it has an internal matrix structure. It carries a replica index. We need a replica to kill unwanted fluctuation determinants. So there is a replica running from 1 to r. R will be sent to 0 in the end of the day. And there is this little causality index, plus minus, which does this bookkeeping about advanced and retargeting functions. So this is a matrix of dimension 2 times r, number of replicas times 2 to the n. Yeah, very high dimensional. And again, it's exact. Now, in order to actually define the problem, I need to tell you more about this Gaussian weight, where all the physics sits. And this Gaussian weight is something you do not want to write down in the occupation number of Fock space. It's way too complicated. It will have a horrible form in this way. But this is now a technical point, but it's very important to make progress. You can do and should do a change of variable at this point. So these matrices, integration matrices, are matrices in Fock space, yeah? And you can represent any matrix in Fock space in the following way. It's a sum over coefficients times basis operators, and these basis operators are constructed as all possible products of Majorana monomials. So once again, I give you an arbitrary matrix in Fock space, and you can always represent it in this way. It's a sum linear combination over Majorana monomials or basis elements of the Majorana Clifford algebra. And there is 2 to the n of them, as much as this matrix space has dimensionality. And these coefficients can be computed simply by tracing the original matrix against these operators. So this is much in common, actually, with a Fourier transform. It's like a Fock space Fourier transform. And the duality between the occupation number basis and this Majorana Clifford basis, I mean, this is actually very similar to the change of a coordinate to momentum basis in single particle quantum mechanics, and it's very useful. Now, once you turn to this representation, the Gaussian weight assumes an almost trivially simple form. It becomes very simple. It becomes just so you it's diagonal in this basis, like in a think of a momentum basis, it's diagonal, and this factor here is just a simple scalar factor. It's a scalar factor which depends only on the length, on the number of Majoranas in your expansion. So if you have 3 Majoranas, for example, this is a Majorana word of length 3. And this weight, this controlling this fluctuation, just depends on this length argument. And it's a simple function. I mean, it's don't need to, we have it analytically. We don't need to write it down. But it starts at unity and then increases rapidly and saturates somewhere at order n squared at average Majorana words of length, typical length n.
Like you're talking about Q equals 4 in the formulas. Does that?
Oh, yeah, sure. This is, I mean, this function is computed from the computation relation of these guys with the SYK Hamiltonian, and this is where the Q.
Right. Does it have a dramatic effect, or is it just a minor?
I didn't look at it. I would guess that if you go to, I mean, if you change Q of order 1, I mean, go to Q. 6 or 8,
yeah.
It will not have a dramatic effect. But if Q becomes of order n, then it's, yeah.
Q much less than n, but
yeah, I think
it will just be some minor.
The physics is that if these Majorana words are very small, if you have just 2 Majoranas here, yeah, this is what's actually mentioned also by Jacques, most of them will commute with
right.
The typical element of your Hamiltonian. This enters here,
right.
this increase. Okay. That's exactly the physics.
But so I expect it to be essentially same functional form, maybe coefficients.
Pretty much, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Once again?
These indices, these mu's.
Yeah, oh, yeah, these are binary. These are just binary. It's just, I mean, the notation is a bit messy, but these are binary 0 and 1, and they just select how many, which, yeah. Mm-hmm. Good, so this more or less completes now the definition of the theory. One final remark. These coefficients, which I mentioned before, here, these guys, in our case, they still carry an internal index structure over replicas and this causality index. So they are 2R dimensional matrices. They are not just numbers. And the theory has a symmetry, which is important for what follows. Namely, these Y fields, the integration matrices, carry an adjoint representation under U2R. I mean, 2 is retarded advance, R is number of replicas, in the sense that if you act on them in this way, the action is invariant. So there's a U2R invariance, which is weakly broken by this energy argument and this I eta. So you have a nearly realized U2R invariance in the problem. This plays an analogous role. This is our conformal symmetry in this business. So now we have the theory, exact rewriting, and the question is what next? Now, what can we do with it? So we stare at it for a while and realize there's a factor D sitting up front, and that invites a stationary phase program. So we run now stationary phase, which means that we simply vary the action in the integration variables to write down a variational equation, which is our analog of the Mellon equation here. Yeah? So this is just, you can almost see it probably, this is a variation of the action. And now we need to solve this equation. We stare at it and we realize that the solution is actually, you can analytically solve it. It's quite simple, in fact. The mean fields we are looking for have an internal structure, Fock space structure, encapsulated by these mu's, and an internal structure in replica space. So it turns out that the unique solution has a very, very simple Fock space structure. It's just isotropic in Fock space, proportional to the unit matrix. So it's Fock space isotropic. Where the internal structure of the mean fields is concerned, remember there is a U2R symmetry, so it suffices to fix the eigenvalues. Eigenvalue equation is quadratic. It's a quadratic equation, so we get two solutions. And which one to pick is determined by this causality structure. This is standard in this game. I mean, this term tells you which solution to pick, and that means that in appropriate units, our mean field is just proportional to a Pauli matrix sigma 3 in advanced retarded space. So that's it, very simple mean field.
Could you say again what delta mu comma 0 means?
This means fancy way of writing unit operator in Fock space. I mean, remember this Majorana, it means zero Majoranas present, unit operator. Yeah, very good. So this mean field, now because of the sigma 3 here, breaks our U2R symmetry. It breaks it from U2, this 2 was advanced retarded, it breaks it from U2R down to UR times UR. This was mentioned by Jacques in the U2 example previously. This is now general for general number of replicas, which means that we actually, on the mean field level, we encounter a coset Goldstone mode manifold because acting with U2R on the symmetry broken mean field generates a whole manifold of solutions generated by acting with a unitary on this diagonal mean field. And in this game, these Goldstone mode matrices are always called Q. Everybody calls them Q. So these are our soft mode integration variables in this problem. Any questions up to this point? This was the technical part, more or less. Yeah?
Sorry, I still don't understand this delta mu 0.
It means the following. It's just notation. I mean, these mu's here are the expansion coefficients of this integration number field in Majorana operators. Yeah. So, if, for example, if mu is, has 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, it means chi 1, chi 2. And then obviously. So this means that on the mean field level, we get a unique solution which has zero Majoranas in the expansion, which means we are just having the unit operator in Fock space. And it has to do with the fact that these guys are traceless in Fock space. So I mean, this is the physics, or not physics, it's technical. Okay?
Two R times
UR. R is the number of replicas. By the way, for the experts, we could just the same do this in supersymmetry formalism, but replicas are a bit more easy to grasp. So, yeah, U2R. Okay. So next steps, this would be now our Schwarzian. Yeah, we expand in the weakly symmetry violating parameters in the theory, which is essentially omega. These are the energy arguments of the Green function. And arrive at this effective action here. So this is the symmetry breaking part of the action times this Q matrix multiplied by pi over level spacing at the band center. And this is a preliminary interesting first result because this action is known to generate random matrix physics. I mean, at this level, if you stop at this level and if you integrate out these Q fluctuations, you got all random matrix correlation functions. At this level, we have random matrix. Yeah? Now, this is not quite the end of the story because there are all these other Fock space fluctuations encoded in mu non equal zero, which have zero stationary field, but still they fluctuate. And we expand in them. They are massive. So these are massive fluctuations, and they have slightly horrible action. Never mind the details here. Just this is a massive action on the quadratic level, and it's very weakly dispersive. Gamma here is the width of the SYK band. So they respond only to frequency changes of the width of the SYK band, but otherwise are strongly massive. And there's many of them. There's 2^n of them. And the sum of these, the Goldstone mode action plus this massive fluctuation, this is now on the mean field level, is the full effective action in the problem. Yeah?
Is there a factor cooking the B out front and it is not controlled, is it?
Oh, this factor is pretty strong. This is actually not it's polynomial in n. So typically, for generic fluctuations, you pay a price n squared. They are not exponentially heavy, but they are algebraically heavy in n. And there's many of them.
But the number of fluctuating degrees of freedom.
Precisely. Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. No, that's totally to the point. Huh? That 98% of the work was sitting in exploring nonlinear fluctuations and seeing if by coupling you generate horrible terms, which I guess is what you're alluding to, and you don't.
No, you
don't want to read this. I mean, this is 10 pages of small print calculation, and if we didn't do a mistake.
So what is your understanding of why are fluctuations under control from this action?
I translate the question as why there are no nonlinearities generated at a higher order, and the number explodes. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't have a good intuitive. The only thing that comes vaguely to mind, I tell you about I speculate on the physics of these fluctuations, and maybe it repeats the question then. I mean. But I don't have a compelling answer. There's one more question. So at this point, we can just test, yeah? We can read out now what the theory has to say. And this is gets us, when are we? Yeah? Oh, yeah.
Where does the restriction on high temperature come from?
I don't have temperature.
Well, you said you're working close to the middle of the.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. This variational equation, which I used, it works only well in the band, the mean field amplitudes. They don't describe well the tails of the spectrum.
This is when you choose the 7 points.
Yeah, exactly. So this quadratic equation means that at this level I have a semicircular density of states, which is totally wrong. We can work much harder and integrate over these, and then we get these combinatorial results. If you want to be on safe ground, you better be close to the band center at this level here.
So that's where these nonlinearities might show up if you insist on going to
terra incognita for me. I don't know. Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, I feel uncomfortable the moment you push me out of the band center. Yeah. So. We can now just read out observables. I mean, R2 of omega, this is just this is a prototypical correlation function, right? Fluctuations in the density of states at slightly different energies around the band center. And if we compute this at this level, we get a random matrix contribution from the Goldstone mode integral. This is a non-perturbative integral over the full symmetric space of these Goldstone modes. And then there are these stupid massive modes. They give us an offset, which is pretty much constant. I mean, it's almost non-dispersive. I neglected even this dispersion here in this formula. And if we plug that in, we get and compute the number variance from that. We get the very good agreement with the formulas Jacques showed in the previous talk. Yeah? I mean, this upturn here, which he mentioned, this one, these are just our massive modes. Stupid massive modes. And this agreement is actually really very good. I mean, it's parameter-free and, works well. You can also, and now I'm getting on more slippery territory, you can take a look at the spectral form factor, where we get RMT, and then we have this upturn here, which is, again, due to these massive fluctuations. But the comparison here with numerics is significantly more tricky, and I understand a lot now depends on how you cut off your fluctuations in the tails of the band. And if you don't force me, I would say the agreement is qualitative. And let's not go into details. I mean, this is really short-time physics on our scales, where we are probing already very large energies. And so the agreement is qualitative, not quantitative.
Can I ask?
Yeah. Maybe you should.
You have your decay times go like what in n? Is this the square root of m? It's delta that's square root of, where is, sorry, it's epsilon of k, that's the...
Oh, this is our this is dispersion we discussed earlier.
But that's like root n or...
No, this goes linear in k for small k. It's linear in k. Yeah. And then for say, for k of order 1. I mean, this k is the length of our Majorana words, and we have n over k of them. But if k is of order n, this goes like n squared upstairs. So it's decays on almost instantly.
And that, do you think that will depend on q? You think that n squared will depend on q? Or will it be like, n, will it get bigger, you don't know?
I would guess it would get bigger in q, but in a manner which I don't understand. I mean, this is just shooting out of the hip, yeah?
Yeah,
I mean,
okay. Maybe we can talk about it.
Yeah. I don't like this regime too much. I mean, it is really very short time for me, but yeah. Okay.
As you said, it's the middle of your diagram.
Yeah. Okay, so I think, here, the physics of this massive mode, I mean, it was discussed in much more qualified terms in Jack's talk, but very briefly from my perspective, what is the physics of this massive mode contributions? We know that in single particle quantum physics, we usually have hard edges in spectra, which reflects overall level rigidity. And SYK, as we heard, is different in that the average spectrum is very soft. We have these collective large fluctuations in the density of states. And my understanding is that this is our way of expressing this presence of these soft fluctuations on top of a rigid SYK random matrix background, which describes spectral fine structures. Yeah, this is sort of the job division here.
The fluctuations are from one ensemble to another, from one value of j to another value of j.
Yeah, I think that's the way. I mean, the characteristic scale exceeds the level spacing by far. I mean, they're in this sense mesoscopic in the spectrum. Okay, so let me now turn to another game you can play, and this is really new. And I need to give you some background first. How much time do I actually have?
Another 20 minutes.
20 did you hear? Oh, I'm doing good. Yeah, we can have look forward to coffee break. It's slightly, different chapter. Yeah, I mean, starting with 2005, the discovery of many-body localization, we have come to classify many-body chaotic quantum systems in two groups, namely ergodic, Wigner-Dyson fluctuating, this is Bohigas, Giannoni, Schmidt physics, and then many-body localized. So many-body localized phase where you have localization in Fock space and correspondingly Poisson spectral fluctuations. And these are really distinct phases. They are separated by phase transition, which usually is driven by some parameter which has the significance of disorder, something like that. Now, rather more recently, starting roughly with 2015, there is mounting evidence that this may be too coarse, this picture, and that rather more generically, I mean, as more or less a rule, there is a third phase sitting between the many-body localized phase and the ergodic phase, and that's one which is still strongly chaotic in the sense that you have Wigner-Dyson spectral fluctuations, but you have non-ergodic wave functions, non-ergodic many-body wave functions, which actually are predicted to show fractal behavior, fractal in Fock space, and realize in their entity a glass phase sitting here. Yeah? This is called non-ergodic extended phase, and this is, I mean, in our business, it's now a hot subject. Yeah, but okay, fine. Yeah.
Maybe not even two dimensions.
Could be, yeah. But sure. I mean, but but these were, I mean, let's agree on this. On up to this point, these were the two principal phases which are discussed in this game.
Is that right?
The
MBL does not exist in three dimensions.
Well, okay. You should ask people like David Hughes, but
he's
3,000
miles away.
I'm not an expert, but from what I've heard. Serious issues with the existence of the field in a generic random model in two dimensions. But for quasi-periodic disorder, it may strictly exist. I mean, it can be a phase with very long equilibration time, but it's not strictly in the thermodynamic level.
Yeah. I don't know where.
Does the MBL adiabatically connect to the Anderson equalization? I mean, as you ramp up U, is there a...
Are you asking whether it's in the same universality class? I don't think it is. But it's quantum. I mean, it's a quantum phase. I mean, that's important because it's glass phase. They say it's classical, in some sense. Whatever classical Fock space, but yeah. Hmm?
Yeah. If it is if this non-ergodic phase is a glass phase, why does it have the Wigner Dyson statistics? One would expect it to be Poisson because there are different valleys, and each valley there may be a Wigner Dyson, but
yeah. I mean, this glass phase, I mean, I should not be held accountable. I mean, it's Boris Altshuler who calls it like this. But I think the picture, let's leave the glass alone. But the picture I think I can vouch for is wave functions concentrated on fractal subsets in Hilbert space. So they're really extended. They're everywhere, but they occupy a set of measure, a sub-extensive measure.
Yeah, but the statistics is more than that.
The spectral statistics, yes. Yeah?
As far as I understand, this non-ergodic phase it's not well established. It's
but look, I mean, will you please let me finish my talk? I mean, okay, I mean, as Ehud was pointing out, we have only highly indirect evidence for this. And the thing is, I mean, the way I understand it, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that doing actually numerics to hunt down these phases, I mean, it's really tricky for real interacting systems to complicate a problem. And what people do in this game is they look at effective models. Not really interacting models, but effective models which are supposedly share key characteristics of interacting systems. And in particular, they are now looking at what is called random regular graphs. And these are random graphs of constant connectivity, which somehow are believed to mimic the complexity of a Fock space. Now you put this order, and then you can show numerically and also semi-analytically that there are these phases around, multifractal phases. There is an even simpler model which shows this type of behavior, which is actually quite beautiful. That is the Rosenzweig-Potter. It's quite old, 1960. Which is just a random matrix, ordinary random matrix, as we all know, perturbed by a diagonal. And as you ramp up the strength of this diagonal, you undergo this sequence of phase transitions. Let me show you. So if you consider an Hamiltonian HRMP plus a diagonal, and you draw these diagonal elements from an IID distribution of a certain variance, which scales to some power of the matrix dimension, then you find that if it's sub-extensive, you get RMT wave function statistics. So this is just another way of writing Gaussian distribution of wave functions, and spectral statistics Wigner-Dyson. If you go to gamma larger than 1, I mean, this scale stronger than the band the dimension of your matrix, you end up with Poisson statistics, and wave functions just localize on single sites asymptotically. But in the middle, there is this interesting regime where you have Wigner-Dyson spectral statistics, and the wave functions scale in a multifractal way. Actually, it's just it's a fractal. I mean, they have show fractal dependence on the exponent of the scaling variable here. Yeah? This is the simplest model I know of which realizes this type of behavior.
In this normalization, the variance of the RMT Hamiltonian is...
The variance is 1 here. Yeah.
It's 1?
1, yeah. So you, what you're asking is you need to go to pretty strong diagonals, yeah? Is that the question?
Yeah, the diagonals are far.
Yeah, yeah, right. But don't forget that the diagonals are just n of them, and they have to fight the whole bunch of n squared or d squared of the other guys sitting in the random matrix.
Okay.
So it's not fair, right? I mean, you need to give them additional strength to fight all the others. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right, and this will become important, I think. One last remark on this Rosenzweig-Potter. You can represent the Green function, I mean, resolvents, you can compute them by the same machinery we discussed before with SYK and end up with an effective action which depends on the same variables, these Qs, in a manner which is kind of similar to what we had. So this Q matrix here and the diagonal sitting there. Yeah, this is just a technical remark, it will pop up later. So there is an effective action representation and Sigma model treatment of this problem from which you can compute here these results. And it has been done in this paper. Okay, so, yeah. No, I don't think that we have really, don't think so. Probably not. So this is background, yeah? And now we recall that the SYK is really a bit like a harmonic oscillator of interacting physics these days, and it is so simple that there is a chance that maybe you can go fishing for these phases within the SYK paradigm, yeah? And this is what we try to do. So, We take our SYK Hamiltonian and now add to it the analog of a random diagonal. We add to SYK an Hamiltonian. Gamma is the SYK bandwidth, yeah? So this Hamiltonian contains random variables, it sums over all Fock space states and projects onto Fock space states. So this is a pretty general operator. I mean, you can, for example, model any SYK Q equals 2 perturbation or Q2 squared in this way, but we take here a maximum entropy approach if you want and just model all these guys as random IID variables. Why do that? Because if we do that, we are granted the sequence of phase transitions we are kind of interested in. It's clear that if we have just H0, our wave functions, I mean, this is a stupid cartoon, yeah? Our wave functions in Fock space from 1 to D are just Gaussian. And if we have just the diagonal, the wave functions are trivially localized in Fock space and their eigenvalues are just these random numbers. But more generally, if both of them are present, then one way of thinking of the problem is this, the SYK Hamiltonian is a hopping Hamiltonian acting on the background of these localized orbitals. So this goes in this direction we're kind of interested in. And now we run the machinery again. Everything is pretty similar, only that now there is this diagonal perturbation sitting in our mean field equations. And as a consequence, these mean field equations become a whole lot more complicated. I mean, they are now really no longer so simple. So we worked a long while on that, and to cut a long story short, the statement is that up to and including pretty strong perturbations, up to perturbations including n squared times the SYK bandwidth, so this is pretty strong, we still have a Fock space homogeneous mean field. So, and we didn't trust our analytic capacity in this way and checked this numerically, so we numerically solved these equations, and I mean, there's analytic solution and numerical solution, so it just checks. So there's a very, very wide regime of perturbations, I mean, super extensive, where we still have this homogeneous mean field to work with, and this is now important because if we now plug in this kind of mean field and again include our Goldstone mode fluctuations, we obtain an effective action. This is now ignoring these massive fluctuations we had before. We obtain an effective action which is just the action of the Rosenzweig-Porter model. So this establishes a universality between the perturbed SYK model and the much simpler Rosenzweig-Porter. And in the consequence, we predict that there is fractal wave function statistics in this problem. And the upshot is kind of summarized here in this slightly busy diagram. So what we consider here is strength of the diagonal, and there are several characteristic scales. I mean, here we exceed the SYK bandwidth. Then we can consider a polynomial in n diagonal perturbations. We can trust ourselves up to n squared, but we believe the theory is valid beyond that. I mean, we love our theory. It should somehow work beyond. I mean, like in QCD, n equals 3 is a large number, yeah? Personally, I believe we can push on, but maybe not to exponentially large perturbations. There is a very, very high scale perturbations as strong as SYK, I mean, Hilbert space dimension, which is pathetically strong, yeah? And only after that, we are in the regime where we expect Poisson statistics. So the SYK Hamiltonian, for all this wide window of perturbations, is very efficient in generating chaos and lead to Wigner-Dyson behavior. And starting from perturbations of order 1, the wave function statistics will change. This is a prediction. I mean, if you perturb stronger than 1 in SYK units, we enter a non-ergodic extended phase, where wave functions are no longer ergodic in Fock space. And there's two regimes here in turn to distinguish for fluctuations and perturbations which are polynomial in the SYK dimension. We expect a weak form of fractality. I'll explain in a second what I mean by that. And for really very strong perturbations, strong multifractality. So this can be made more quantitative. We can work out from our action wave function moments by doing this Q-matrix integrals, much like I've discussed before, and then obtain analytic results for the moments of wave functions in Fock space. And there are, again, these regimes. For small perturbations, we obtain RMT moments, Gaussian distribution. Then if the perturbation becomes stronger than the SYK bandwidth, you observe qualitative deviations from RMT behavior. And if it becomes fraction of extended strong, you obtain fractal behavior in the sense that wave functions now only occupy a fraction of the Hilbert space, of the Fock space. So this is what we get as a prediction. And I should like to quote, I mean, I like this. Gregory mentioned this morning, what is nice about SYK models is that we can always do numerics to test if our results are right or wrong. Yeah, I'm good. So we did some numerics on this. For systems which are pathetically small, I should say, yeah? So this is only 2n equals 16. I mean, experts can only laugh at this. But there's lots of runs here over disorder realizations. And so this, what you see here is that indeed there is a Wigner-Dyson to Poisson crossover in the numerics at the expected time strength of the diagonal. So this is the Kullback-Leibler entropy of spectral correlations. It just shows that there is this crossover at a very strong perturbation. And this here is the what we call the inverse participation ratio, the fourth moment of wave functions. And you see down here the RMT result. And indeed, there is now systematic deviations from RMT. And the theory, analytic theory, begins to disagree. The analytic is black from the numerics, again, at this Poisson scale, where we should expect it. So the upshot is, this is really very basic numerics, but this kind of fractality is real in this problem. And we have this kind of, we believe we have this phase here to play with. Yeah. Okay, and yeah, that's pretty much all I wanted to say. I mean, the summary is very short. I mean, there is this kind of theoretical approach, which I think is useful in its own kind of range of applicability, and in this sense complements G sigma. It is tailored to describing spectral and wave function statistics, ideally in the band center. And there's a number of open questions which I don't understand. I mentioned it. I don't have no idea how this causality symmetry breaking and conformal symmetry, how they connect to each other. So, maybe somebody can explain to me. I certainly don't understand this. And one thing I would like to know, but it's a question to the audience, really. We play with these diagonal perturbations here. Is there anything useful one can learn from that holography-wise? I mean, probably they're totally useless. We like them from a quantum chaos perspective, but maybe there are some effective models you can dream up where such a perturbation may have some relevance in this context. Okay, thanks, that was all.
Okay, we had a lot of questions as we went on, but we do have time for more.
In the second part of your talk, if you add a Q equals 2 SYK,
yes.
Does that morally do the same thing? You made a brief
comment. Yeah, right. We're just now. I mean, this is only this plot is 1 week old. Yeah, which I showed. So it's very. But we're thinking if you do Q equals 2 and you allow me, algebraically few random coefficients in this SYK. Yeah.
Well, how about just the full set of n squared in the Q?
Sure, but you can pre-diagonalize that. Yeah, and then these eigenvalues, you get an antisymmetric matrix, and you can. You can reduce it to an pre-diagonalized form. And if these numbers are now n, order n randomly fluctuating quantities.
Right.
And what we are checking now is if
they're not IID. They're
not IID, exactly.
But
maybe I'm wrong. Is it that it doesn't change too much, and you may still get such a face, but I don't know.
I mean, what would be interesting is you can compute analytically things like the out-of-time order correlator in that coupled system.
Right.
And we can see you, you know.
But out of time order is more for you people, because this is like, really, we do long times here. Yeah?
You don't think if you have some horribly screwed up wave function, it's not going to affect the...
Oh, it certainly will, but all I'm saying is this approach may not be the best approach to do out-of-time correlations in this perturbed setting. I'd rather do G-sigma, I mean... No?
Okay. All right. I'll pass the mic on.
I want to follow up on Steve's question on the same model. If normally the way we would take the large n limit, we would scale the q equals 2 term by a factor of 1 over square root of n,
yeah,
where the q equals 4 is scaled by 1 over n to the 3,
yeah,
3 halves. Mm. So if I understand right, you're playing with this factor of 1 over square root of n. It's n to the gamma, 1 over n to the gamma or something. Then it's only when gamma is small enough that you get these multi-fractal transition.
Yeah, yeah, you need...
So what is the value of gamma for that model?
I mean, to see deviations, I mean, in this particular model, we have to translate to this real Q equals 2. You need to go to n larger than, I mean, n to the alpha, and alpha should be larger than 0. Then you see qualitative deviations from, first qualitative deviations from RMT statistics.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
He said, okay, go ahead.
Let me see, when you define this factor dimension, is a summation of all the Angen wave function or just one Angen wave function?
No, it's summed. It's summed
sum
over.
Of all from ground state to the excited state?
You mean this?
Oh, it's a summation.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know if it's a chaotic, it satisfies ETH. If it's a many-body localized, does not satisfy ETH.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about this intermediate phase, this factor phase?
Yeah, that's what they, so the intuition they, I mean, Altshuler and company talk about. Think about it coming from the perspective of non-ETH, I mean, just Poisson localized, yeah.
Yeah.
So you have a very strong diagonal, you're sitting, and this perturbation, SYK perturbation is weak. So then you hop a little bit, you hop a little bit in Fock space, but you run out of steam. I mean, and in the end, you have few spikes in Fock space. This is the folklore, and these spikes define a fractal. This is what they say. Sounds plausible, no?
So suppose I just take one Angen state, take one excited state.
Yeah.
In this fractal phase.
Yeah.
Does it satisfy ETH?
It's certainly not ergodically, if you translate ETH to microcanonical and ergodic, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you compute the level statistics in the undeformed model, is it consistent with the previous talk that there are a few, very few global modes, and otherwise it's...
That's a good question. We can't group them together to see actual few collective modes. We see lots of, in some way, cooperative modes, which in the end must add up to give this thing. Here we are. Yeah.
So in your analytical approach, mm-hmm. it was not clear to me why the hostile modes and the massive modes factorized.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to fourth order,
yeah,
you would get mixing terms.
Yeah, you get, and of course we were.
How do you know?
Yeah, this is of course what we have been monitoring. I tried to keep this technical level to a tolerable minimum, but these were exactly the questions we were after. I mean, are there cross correlations? Are there nonlinear terms? I mean, you should fear the real enemy here to fear is that you generate order 2 to the n squared quartic terms where all these nonlinear modes and mix, but if we didn't do a mistake, they don't. And the same goes for these Goldstone mode, massive mode fluctuations or correlations.
Why not? But certainly at higher order, they enter at fourth order if you expand the logarithm.
But then if you plug this in, I mean, if you plug this Goldstone mode fluctuation on top of the massive mode integration, you do not get more additional contributions. Don't press me for quantitative now and what parameter and so on, but we have been reasonably careful with that, I think.
I said I want to understand the connection between this story and the story that we heard from Ehud Altman about this Liouvillean.
Ah, very good, yeah. It's very close,
so,
yeah.
So he could launch us there, analyze the system, yeah, and map it to a tight bonding model. Mm. So what is the implication for your action?
No idea. But all I want to say is I think the mindset is very close. I mean, this like Ehud, I mean, this is his first quantized perspective, and he second transparency was this horrible graph, which is our Fock space. And he has his cumulants, I mean, Green functions, only that this time we can sort of navigate a little bit analytically in this.
Maybe ask an irrelevant question. Is there a connection between this weak wave function fractality with quantum scar?
With scarring, I don't think so. Okay. I mean, scars, the way I interpret, are just wave functions concentrated on periodic orbits. We don't have tend not to have periodic orbits in Fock spaces because it's so bloody difficult to self-return. So this periodic orbit classification of single particle quantum mechanics has not been very useful, to the best of my knowledge.
But there's this quantum many body scar story.
Probably you can talk, yeah, but first of all, I don't know, and second, I tend not to believe, yeah.
Your statement that the SYK model is robust to these diagonal terms. Mm. This is actually also a statement about infinite temperature near the middle of the band, right?
Yeah.
It might be unstable to those at
totally,
low
yeah.
temperatures.
Yeah, yeah.
It probably is.
Probably is. Yeah. This is certainly true. Juan.
Can this fractality of the wave functions be seen in correlators or in some other behavior as a function of time? Or?
Probably. I mean, this is the standard observables are these guys, right? This is where people, this is what people always compute in to approach this fractality, but it's probably showing up in some way or another. But I don't know anything intelligent to say. Yeah.
Uh-huh. You can probably see them in return probability because you localize on these fractal.
I guess I would say if you have this fractality, you will be hard pressed to find an observable that does not respond to it, because after all, the global structure of the wave function that's affected. So it's pretty strong game changer, I think, in physics.
So we just have a recent work with Joffe.
In
which we were able to map the low energy sector of the quantum random energy model into a Rosen order.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising it goes with Joffe because you know the limit of the P spin and P infinity is exactly the quantum
Random. And random energy, you would take a hypercube and put random energies.
Saw that the fractality actually referred can be seen in the order parameter of the glass of the sigma z, sigma z. So we have because of this mapping.
So you have a better understanding why it's a glass than me. I mean,
Yes. So the paper will be out
soon. Yeah, okay. Thank you. I didn't know him.
Could you calculate the 1-point function?
Density of state?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, we did that.
To get it not in a semicircular limit.
We did
but
that.
But more accurately.
I took it out of my slides. It was too messy anyway. But one thing I wanted to say is that before doing mean field, you can do a perturbative expansion of this trace log and integrate out these y's, and we get your combinatorial series. So this is total check, I mean, one-to-one. But it has to, because it's an exact rewriting of the partition function. So if you then do perturbation theory on top of it, you have to get.
Okay.
So this.
Any further questions? Okay, if not, let's go ahead and thank our speaker again, and we'll start in another